I also, because this is the same notebook I use for Escape from Walt Disney, too.
Mm.
And I was like, why am I...
What are these notes about a donkey?
Yeah, I'm literally on that page. I went, what the fuck was the Gus episode?
Did the doctor teach a mule to play football? Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I do not know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today we are looking at Series 4, Episode 2, The Fires of Pompeii.
Isn't there another way? He's just a boy!
Yes, I am very excited about this because I don't want to say memory serves correctly because you just told me this, but one of your hyperfixations as a kid was Pompeii.
To be fair, I had a teacher in the fourth grade who I think was Latin, she or Greek, something, but she taught Latin. And so we had a lot of like Latin history, the history of ancient Greece, ancient Rome. And so I specifically remember being deeply fascinated in the tragedy that is the eruption of Mount Vesuvius.
Yes.
And also Vesuvius, a great name. Eruption of Mount Vesuvius. It just rolls off the tongue. Vesuvius.
Do you know that Pompeii is why we have the word for volcano?
That makes sense.
Yeah, yes, it's the anger of the god Vulcan that has rained his fire upon the people, and so Pompeii is where they gained the word. But this is the Fires of Pompeii. Just because it is your hyperfixation, do you have any sort of expectations going into this one?
I mean, I feel very similar to this as I did the Titanic episode.
Okay.
Where Pompeii does not end in victory. There are very few stories of, you know, written or oral historical stories of people that escaped the eruption and lived their lives healthy and happy.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the stories we know of Pompeii are those that we found buried deep underground.
Of people who have been, you know, turned into living statues. Not even living, they've been turned into statues.
Yeah, where they basically are, what's the word, like petrified.
Yeah.
In time. It's people that are clinging onto their loved ones and, you know, presumably a mother and father with a small skeleton in between them because that's their child. You know, it's every story to come from that tragedy is, it's so sad. But we've learned so much about how the ancient world operated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you find not, I mean, they weren't intentional tombs, but tombs of, you know, marketplace sides and vases that still have the remnants of stuff in them. I forget what it is exactly. I'm blanking out on the name. But it's like a specific pickled fish.
Okay.
And it is incredibly smelly. And there's plenty of people now that have recreated it. And it's horrifying, disgusting, nasty smelling stuff. But, you know, back in the day, that's delicious. Liquid gold if you could get it. And it's just interesting to me, and it has always been so interesting to me, the fact that in modern times, we can surmise quite a bit from the past out of tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very seldom do you know exactly how somebody lived because of glowing, like, victorious stories. Because
mm-hmm.
even, like, if you look at pharaohs, yes, you can surmise quite a bit about how a pharaoh lived their life, but you don't really know a whole lot of the nitty-gritty, the actual,
the
like
day-to-day.
Yeah, because the day-to-day stuff was day-to-day. It was unimportant. So that kind of stuff has been lost to time.
Mm-hmm.
Unless something unforeseen and you know, horrific happened to stop time in its tracks,
mm-hmm.
to only be unearthed hundreds of years later by some college students on a field trip.
So let's do the Cassie Brafassi here. Now that we've got your thoughts here.
Yeah, we'll take it way back to the Greek origins. Miss Cassandra herself, bless me in this moment.
Well, I mean, you're not entirely wrong because this episode does feature some prophets of its own.
Is Cassandra in it?
Not Cassandra, no.
Okay.
Am I in it? This episode does have some assorted... we've already met Lady Cassandra, so...
Shut up. She doesn't count.
Moisturize you.
Yeah. I'm moisturizing myself because it's so hot.
This episode does indeed have its own share of prophets, but the process of being a seer is changing their bodies somehow. How do you think they might be changing?
Eyes.
I
think that they're getting the Doctor Strange treatment.
Like the third eye in the middle of their forehead?
Yeah. Weird CGI.
Okay. So
do you like that little joke, CGI?
All right, so Cassie's prediction is that they get weird CGI eyes.
CGI eyes? Not the lemur, Zach. They don't get computer-generated eyes. That would be ridiculous. Those are in Madagascar.
And for this one, before I have you make a prediction, I'm going to let you make a choice. So this episode features two actors.
Okay.
Both of whom go on to have a more prominent role in the future of Doctor Who as different characters than they play in this episode.
Not Simon Pegg.
One of them is male and one of them is female. Okay. I will let you pick which one you want to make a guess about.
That's not fair.
I will also give you a choice of one of three things they could be, but I'm going to let you decide if you're going to pick the male actor or the female actor.
We've already had quite a few like surprise male actors.
Okay.
So I'll do female.
Okay. So you're picking the female actor that comes up here. Mm-hmm. Do they become a future doctor, a future companion, or a future villain?
No. I mean, doctor would be very surprising since there was only the one.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that it's not an option, but not likely.
Okay.
I'm unpacking how you said okay. Do I get any other hints?
I mean, I gave you a list. I don't know how much more I can narrow it down than three things.
Well, like what I know them in anything else.
Yes. In fact, you might even know both the male and female actor.
From other things. Because truthfully, if it was female actor that then later on becomes the doctor, I don't know anything about her other than that is the role she plays.
Okay.
I cannot tell you her name. I do not know anything else she's in. So I think that I can eliminate that.
Okay. So you don't think it's Jodie Whittaker is what you're saying?
Thank you. Yes. No. I don't know. Yes, please. Goodbye.
Okay. Let's just say you've called in your favor from the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire audience, and they've told you it's definitely not option A. So now you've narrowed it down to either companion or villain.
Yeah, I didn't know I played this game with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire rules. That changes the game significantly.
Oh, I was just using a metaphor. You don't actually get a phone a friend.
Oh man, presses end call.
It's like, I know exactly who I'm going to call. It's a guy that knows a lot about Doctor Who and my phone rings.
Yeah. Genuinely, there's only three people I feel like I could call. And only one of them I know actually knows things. The other two, I feel like they know things. See, this feels like I'm at a disadvantage, though, because I don't know much about either.
I mean, you don't necessarily have to know. I'm letting you make the... Because I can tell you who it is when you see them. You also might know when you see them. But I'm going to just let you guess, and I will let you know if you're right or not.
I guess villain.
Villain?
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
It's a toin cost.
A toin cost?
Yeah, it happened again. I asked somebody today if they asked me to describe the avocado toast, and I was describing it. Avocado, microgreens, radish, pepitas, and then it gets a drizzle of And I could not say the three words in synchrony. Yes. Without fucking them up. The term I was trying to say was kale basil pesto. All that came out was bale kazel pesto or pale kazel besto. And I was like, you know what I'm saying. I'm not going to say it again.
Alrighty, so the Cassie Profassi today are that the seers of Pompeii are growing third eyes on their forehead. These little CGI eyes. And there is a female actor in this episode that will come back in the future of Doctor Who as a villain. We will find out together as we watch The Fires of Pompeii.
Kale, basil, pesto. I did it!
This episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by Golden Calf Chocolates. Velvety caramel, rich nougat, and the blood of a ram is tribute in the hopes of a good harvest. These are the central flavors that make up Golden Calf Chocolates. Whether you're rounding off an elegant meal, preparing to have ritual sex to symbolize the union of heaven and earth, or just needing a little pick-me-up in the middle of the day, Golden Calf Chocolates are the only choice for the little devil in all of us. Golden Calf Chocolates. They're sacrilegious. And we are back from the fires of Pompeii.
Mm-hmm.
You there, boy. What day is it?
Me, sir? Oh, it's Volcano Day.
Oh, God, I didn't miss it. Oh, God, I'm gonna die.
Wee!
Why, it's Volcano Day.
This is my first thought when he said, it's Volcano Day at the very beginning.
Yeah, that's why we said it was gonna be the opening bit, Zach.
I mean, it was almost as good as their opening bit where Donna goes, wait a minute, that sign's in English. Are you having a laugh? Are we in Epcot?
Yeah.
So, what'd you think of the fires of Pompeii, Cassie?
I liked it.
I really
like Donna as a foil to the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Because the angle is not that she's, what's the word I'm looking for? She's not strung along with the Doctor. She's not pining after him. They're just good buds.
Yeah. And they're also not, like, perfectly in sync. They do have issues where they butt heads with one another.
Which I already like that.
Yeah.
Right out the gate. I really like Donna proposing ethical dilemmas and being the very, like, I like Donna being the human advocate.
Yeah.
Like, the advocate for the human race, rather.
Yeah, the person that brings the Doctor back down to the ground. I also am a huge fan of this episode. It's one of my favorites. I also think it's one of those, like, really emotionally, it's one of those episodes where you're like, oh, this is what the show is about.
Well, especially since we did get a little bit of Time Lord lore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get a better understanding about how the Doctor operates and how he sees the world.
Yeah, he sees the world
and
not the
world necessarily. I'm using the world as a surrogate for the entire universe and all the worlds within it.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, we can fixate on Earth just because that's the easiest place to start. But we get an understanding about how the Doctor sees time.
Mm-hmm.
And how he even says that some things are fixed and some things are in flux. You know, and how Donna even points out, like, so back in 2008, like, you saved me. And he's like, yeah, that's because that's a moment in time that was in flux. Even in this one, he, you know, we later find out this is a moment in flux.
Only sort of. It's a fixed point, but fixed points can be futzed with on the ends.
Well, it's a fixed point in the sense that there are the reason why none of the soothsayers or seers or any of those people could see the eruption of Vesuvius is because the eruption wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, not until the doctor got involved.
Yeah.
But however, if the eruption didn't happen, the whole of the Earth would be taken over by the pyroviles.
Yeah. So it's the...
And all 70% of the water would be boiled off the Earth. Ah!
Not 70% of the water. 100% of the water would boil and the land would burn.
Yeah. Just... Sorry, I meant 70% of water on Earth. The Earth is 70% water.
Yes.
So I just misspoke there. But, ooh, yeah, like when he yells that, every time I hear it, it sort of sends a chill down me a little bit.
Yeah, I should warn you, it's 70% water on there.
Water can boil, and everything will burn, Doctor!
Well, because then it just made me pan over to his little water pistol and go... Why isn't that boiling? You're inside of a molten mountain.
Yeah, I feel like not even just like the water boiling. I feel like the gun should be melting.
Yeah, well, every part of that would be unbearably hot.
Yeah.
Things are on fire. The air is on fire.
Yep.
I do like that the overall color saturation for the inside of the fucking volcano is... yellow, and therefore everything kind of becomes sepia-toned.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think that's a cool thing.
Looks like the inside of a toaster oven.
Yeah, it's a specific art exhibit where everything, or like the entire room is yellow, or it's a specific shade of color, or a specific shade of light, rather, that basically negates all shades of color. So you go in and you're literally seeing in sepia tone. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it freaks me out because I wear rose tinted glasses specifically because I think they look cool. And I like to see things with just a little bit more color.
They also help with your migraines.
Most importantly, yes, they help me with my migraines. But I do like seeing the world through rose-tinted glasses. I just think that's fun. Let me live in ignorance and bliss. Thank you.
You sort of touched on the main conflict of this story. Because there is this thing going on with the pyroviles. I think the main conflict is that Donna wants to save the citizens of Pompeii. And the doctor is like, we can't do that.
Well, she even tries. As the sky is snowing down in ash, she's screaming at people to run towards the hills, don't go towards the beaches.
Don't go to the beach, go to the hills! Listen to me! Don't go to the beaches, look safe!
So the reason why is because the beaches got covered in volcanic ash and sand. So they got buried in ash. They, in fact, only just recently uncovered one of the beaches in Pompeii. They only uncovered that 2 weeks ago.
Damn.
As of recording this. Yes.
So how did they know that back in 2008?
I mean, they would have known that the beaches were covered under volcanic ash. They just wouldn't have had it uncovered. It just was still covered until now. So yeah, but it is one of those, like, yeah, what if there was a time traveler that was just, like, yelling in the streets about the world ending, you just think they're a homeless person having an episode.
You wouldn't know, especially since by that point. And I do love Donna's little, like, makeover transformation throughout the episode where she starts the top of the episode dressed as a mom on holiday.
Yeah.
And then by this point, she's wearing a toga. She's in purple, which is more or less a color reserved for, like, kings.
Yeah, it's a little weird that they have that.
Now, to be fair, purple is a wonderful color for her.
Mm-hmm.
However, historically speaking, even because the like wealthy family is also wearing these like beautiful, like rich, saturated blues, and the son is wearing purple, the daughter is wearing gold, like that would not have been the case. Even if they were wealthy, yes, they would have been wearing more exotic colors, but they would have been in shades of red and pink. Colors that were a little bit more accessible and easy to come by, but not as luxurious as purple, which was reserved for royalty, not upper middle class, which this family clearly was.
Yeah, they were. It was Peter Capaldi was the head of the family. That was the male actor I was telling you about. He goes on to become the 12th Doctor, following Tennant is 10, and then Matt Smith is 11. Peter Capaldi comes after him. It's really kind of cute watching this because Peter Capaldi is a huge Doctor Who fan. Like, enormous, like, he ran a Doctor Who fan club as a teenager.
Mm.
That's how much he loves this, and so it's also really fun when he becomes the Doctor later on, but it is kind of cute seeing him and Tennant interacting, because those two actors are the biggest Doctor Who fans, I think, to have ever played the Doctor.
Like, you watching this now in the year of our Lord 2024.
Yes.
Knowing back in 2008, it was just an honor for Capaldi to be on the show.
Yeah, he was just so excited. And you could tell because he's, like, acting. He's like, this is my one shot on the show. I'm going to walk away from this as a remembered face. Yeah. And they sure remembered his face.
Yeah.
They used it again.
Well, because I'm even surprised that Karen Gillan is... She's not featured necessarily. She's in it, but she's not at all.
She has a very prominent, and she's very prominent in the beginning as one of the
even
seers
still,
that is like following them around, and like you can see her.
Even still, just because of the face paint,
mm-hmm.
there is a sense of yes, she stands out, but she's also anonymous once she is in the like sisterhood.
Yeah, I think she also would have been really young at this point. I think Karen Gillan.
Mm-hmm. I believe we're only a couple years apart.
Yeah, Karen Gillan was born... Oh, never mind. Take it back. She was born in 1987, so she was 21 at the time.
Yeah, a couple years apart.
You're basically a decade apart.
Yeah, a couple years apart, Zach.
Yeah, so she would have been 21 filming this, and you could see that she looks very young. One thing that's funny, though, is that because she is Scottish, whenever she has to do lines like...
with the High Priestess of the Sibylline.
She's having to really enunciate to try and get over her Scottish accent.
Ooh. Jadoon.
Yeah, they didn't give her any of those.
Good.
But yes, Karen Gillan is, as you know, Matt Smith's companion.
I don't actually know that, but I guess now I do.
Oh, I thought you did know that.
No. Okay. I don't know anything about Matt Smith, other than he looks like our good friend and best boyo, Christian B. Schmidt. That's all I know about Matt Smith and bow tie. He's the bow tie one.
He is the bow tie one. Yes, Karen Gillan is Matt Smith's companion. She is not a future villain, so unfortunately there's no point for that. Also, there is...
I should get half a point for seers having painted eyes.
Unfortunately, you had specifically said CGI eyes.
I didn't say that. You said that.
No, you said that. I repeated it back at you.
You said that.
And you also specifically phrased it as the ones they have in their forehead.
Okay, yeah, but also if they had CGI eyes on their fucking hands, I would have gotten the point for that anyways.
I would have given you the point if it were CGI eyes on the hand. So the point I was looking for, though, was that they were turning to stone.
I even repeated it back to you. I hate you sometimes, you know that?
I am an aggravating person to be around.
Yes!
To be fair, this show is built around me being a know-it-all. Like, almost quite literally. But I really like that... A lot of this is sort of moment-to-moment building on plot stuff. The most interesting parts of it really come when Vesuvius finally erupts and the Doctor realizes that he has to cause it. Like, it's not just that he can't save 20,000 people. He has to kill 20,000 people to save the rest of the planet.
It is the literal worst trolley scenario.
Yeah. It's a trolley problem where the trolley's options are you either kill 20,000 people... Or the trolley kills everyone, including these 20,000 people.
Yeah.
So I understand how the choice does become a little easier in that regard.
Well, when you consider either only these people die and the rest of the world lives, or these people die and the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Like, these people are going to die irrespective.
Yeah. But then the Doctor really has to, like, sit with it. When they come back with the TARDIS, you can really get the feeling of he's, like, really going through a lot of emotion in that moment.
My note was, uh-oh, Doctor, your Eccleston is showing. Because that's the intensity that it was at, is...
Don't you think I've done enough? History's back in place and everyone dies.
Here is the weight of this problem, especially considering that Gallifrey burned.
Yeah.
And even says, would that he could, he would go back and save his planet, save his people, but he can't. And the fact that he has to be the cause of another people burning.
Mm-hmm.
Someone needs a therapist.
Unfortunately, the Gallifreyan
Donna
therapist
is
burned.
The therapist.
God, what a terrible therapist Donna Noble is.
I know.
They have this really, really sweet moment where Donna is openly bawling because she just went through one of the most traumatic things any human being can, which is watching.
Living history.
Yeah, living history. Especially because they, I don't know if you caught it, but they intercut some of the volcano erupting with an actual volcano eruption.
No, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, so there's some scenes of like actual lava coming down the mountain. There's some, I believe when they have ash blocking out the sun, that is also actual footage from a volcanic eruption. I would assume these are from like Hawaii, not from...
Yeah.
But you could, for me, I can tell because the footage suddenly shifts in quality. And I assume because it's, that wasn't taken like recently, that was taken when they could.
Yeah.
And so she's like really crying, like pretty movie crying. She's doing an ugly cry.
I think that's, we've had this conversation before about the difference between funny comedic actors and good comedic actors.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Williams being the pinnacle of, you know, pinnacle yeah. of a good comedic actor is somebody who can balance sincerity mm-hmm. and vulnerability
mm-hmm.
with comedy.
Yeah.
And I think Catherine Tate is somebody who can do that.
Yeah.
Where she's a silly goose. She's a little bit of a silly goose.
Gooseberry cinnamon yogurt.
Yes. But she does a very good job, especially in this episode. Like I said, at the top of this episode or at the top of this recording session, she is the advocate for the human race.
Yeah.
And so I think that in that moment, that role is solidified. It is set in stone.
Pun intended?
Pun accidental, but pun very good, so I'm keeping it.
I would go even further and say it's not that just she's an advocate for humans, she's an advocate for humanity. And I don't mean, like, the race. I mean, like, to be human, to care about someone else, to be for other people.
The human experience, you could even really blow it up to its macro, or not macro, it's like major scale.
Yeah.
It's refreshing because up until this point, at the very least, the companions I've seen are just genuinely happy to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nothing against Rose, Martha, and I'll even throw Astrid into that. I mm-hmm. think she counts as having inner conflict with the Doctor, but having it be a personal conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Donna's conflict isn't necessarily personal
mm-hmm.
because it's not her saying, what have I done? What is my family? I'm betraying myself. I'm betraying my family. I'm whatever. Because she even says, as she's leaving in the TARDIS, like, fuck you, Mom. As she's flying away and waving to her grandfather. Like, I don't feel that Donna's dilemma is internal
mm-hmm.
as much as it is.
It's not interpersonal. It is.
Thank you. Yes, it's not interpersonal. It is, like, internal existential.
Yeah. I think there's also something to be said of the fact that all the companions the Doctor has had up to this point in New Who, at least, specifically talking about Rose, Martha, and Astrid, are all characters that look up to the Doctor in some way.
Yeah.
They're all either mystified by, you know, Martha was enchanted by how intelligent he is, and Rose was enchanted with everything about him. Astrid really liked this.
His ability to just go.
Just go places and
do things. To see new skies.
Yeah. Donna's a little more, I mean, she's older than at least Martha and Rose for sure. Probably also Astrid, or if not literally older than, like, Donna has matured more than Astrid, because Donna is more sure of who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a little bit more of a willingness to push back against the Doctor that previous companions haven't really had.
Yeah.
Like, Martha's main pushback was that the Doctor doesn't requite her feelings, and she would get annoyed at that.
It's also the fact, too, that Donna isn't trying to get the Doctor to like her.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that she doesn't care that the Doctor doesn't like her, because that's not the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Doctor is actually quite fond of her companionship, just for, in the sense that she's not looking for a, or she's not looking to mate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're both just kind of looking for friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so, be that as it may, she's a very good foil for the Doctor in the sense that, like you said, she can push back. She can say no, and mm-hmm. she can be stubborn.
Or in this case, when the Doctor is moping and really feeling the weight of the fact that he just had to take 20,000 lives, Donna says,
"Just someone, please. Not the whole town. Just save someone."
And it's like, it's a really powerful moment, and it also that moment comes back. Like, that's an important moment for the Doctor.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's also not like she's asking him to take the family with them.
Yeah. She just said someone. She didn't say who. The Doctor chose to take Caecilius and his family.
Mm-hmm. Well, in all fairness, too, he spent the most time with them.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Gary Busey with the big teeth.
Gary Busey with the big teeth is such like a Wish.com version of Becky with the good hair. We also learned about what the TARDIS translation matrix and how it works when you're speaking the language you're supposed to be already speaking.
Mm-hmm.
They're translated into Latin because they're in ancient Rome, or in Pompeii in this case. And so Donna is like, what if I try speaking actual Latin? So she says, "Vene vidi vici." And they're like, "I no speak Celtic, ma'am."
I do like that they still have these thick English British like Aardman-esque accents.
Especially that guy, especially.
"I really don't speak Celtic." Jeez Louise, dude.
But then any time they said anything in Latin, they brought it up a couple times so they could keep doing
it. Status quo.
Caveat emptor was one of them. He's, "Oh, you're Celtic. That's nice."
Ah, oh, she's Welsh. Well, because then it does make you think, like, wow, there are a lot of terms that we've just kind of picked up directly from Latin and just...
Yeah, they just, like, we pepper them in our language, and it's the only thing keeping that language alive these days.
Mm. Poor language.
Aw. When the Doctor's TARDIS gets sold, because it was sitting on his plot, on that seller's plot...
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, how is the Doctor expressing such restraint in this moment?
Yeah.
Can you imagine for what?
I can imagine, actually. I can totally imagine expecting to walk out to what is effectively your car, keys in hand, and go,
"That's weird.
It should be here."
But then it's not just that guy's like, "Yeah, I sold it." It's like, "Well, don't take it up with me. Take it up with the guy who bought it." Like, no, you sold it, asshole.
I do like when they cut to Caecilius' house and he just goes, "Modern art."
That's what I was getting to. My favorite cut is like, "What did he want a big blue box for?" "Modern art." It's such a good... And it's like a tight close-up on his face, too, so you could really get the, like, wide-eyed nature.
It's a good excuse, too. Because 9 times out of 10, I feel like in any situation that includes the ancient world, any modern thing is like, oh, it's alien, it's of the gods, it's... But in this one, he goes, nah, this is modern art.
I also really enjoyed how the TARDIS doesn't leave his house until the end of the episode. No. It's just there the whole time.
Where is she gonna go?
Just take it.
Where is she? It's safe there. At least it's not going to get sold again. When the family is bracing the house during the earthquake, a la the Banks family in Mary Poppins at like 8:40 in the morning.
Yeah, because their neighbor is firing off fireworks, much like people are doing above us right now. Or not fireworks.
They're firing off a cannon, but yeah. His like clock is off. Or I think like in the story, it's that the captain's clock has been slowly, over time, like, not being on time.
Mm-hmm.
But he's upset because his clock is perfectly on time. Everybody else's clocks are wrong. Which is why it goes off at weird times, like 8:40.
Mm-hmm. We find out that Caecilius has made a marble floppy disk of sorts.
Yeah.
He reveals it, and it just straight up looks like a computer chip. And I'm like, you know, Good on them for finding a way to make something that does look like both a slab of marble and also a computer chip. That couldn't have been easy.
Mm-hmm. I do like when I'm jumping into the episode a little bit farther. Mm-hmm. When the doctor goes into Gary Busey with the big teeth. Seems like Argus.
He's the auger of the city.
The auger. the doctor and the son go to his house to look at these chips to figure out what they are. And as the doctor is leaving in a rush, he knocks them over. And the auger says something to the extent of, "My art!
My cabbages!"
Yeah.
You know, it's
had that same energy.
His name, by the way, was Lucius.
Lucius. Also, though, I do like we're gonna skip back in time a little bit. Can you imagine being roasted by both an old man and a teenage girl?
Oh, geez.
Can you imagine being told things about your life, things that you didn't know other people knew, by an old man and a teenage girl? With wonderful jaw structure and beautiful hair and eyes. Not that I was, like, crushing on her while we were watching the episode, but still.
She was cute, for sure.
She's very cute.
There was one moment where Gary Busey with the big teeth and Evelina start basically having a prophecy off, where Evelina has been huffing the fumes, as it were, and now she sees the future. And Gary Busey with the big teeth just goes,
"The prophecies of women are limited and dull. Only the menfolk have the capacity for true perception."
Like, what?
Hey, in my lifetime, I have never, ever heard another woman say something and think, that can't be true. Anytime a woman says, like, any sort of prophetic or, like, you'll get X thing back. In this case, it was any woman I talked to about my car getting stolen. It's back now. But my car getting stolen, any one of them that went, "You'll get it back," I went, "I believe you implicitly." I have no reason to not believe you, but I also have no reason to. I'm just really going off of all of our collective witchy vibes to get my car back. Bitch, it worked.
But they start having a prophecy off, and they start revealing, "Oh, you're the doctor, and you call yourself noble, and you're from London, and you're from Gallifrey, and I heard you make like an actual like, what?" when he said
Well,
Gallifrey.
I'm just imagining too, like, if somebody were to pinpoint exactly where I was from,
mm-hmm.
like if somebody that I just met was like, "Oh, you're from Pasadena, right? What?" That's not information a lot of people know anymore, because I don't live there anymore.
but also, it's like,
"Your grandparents are from Kentucky." That's information not a lot of people know. Well, now they do, but, you know.
Yeah, but it's also like if someone pinpointed that you're from Pasadena, while also they're not aware that this state of California is a thing that exists.
Mm-hmm.
Like, naming Gallifrey is a big deal. They also touch on the fact that the doctor's real name is unknown. The doctor hides his real name, which is...
I thought that was just because he hides his real name. His real name is Time Lord.
Well, he was saying that he is a Time Lord. The doctor does have a name.
Do we find out what it is ever?
No, but it is a plot point that nobody knows it. It becomes a thing. You'll find out about that in an episode called The Name of the Doctor.
Oh, well, all right then.
There was a moment that you really liked where the brother is bringing a torch with him to light the way, and you were like, "Man, I really like that when David Tennant says, 'Hand me that torch,' he means an actual torch."
Yeah, it freaks me out that the British refer to flashlights as torches. I understand why. It still is odd to me. That's the one thing that I've always been like, wow, that is so very different.
Because Donna starts telling the daughter about how Vesuvius is going to erupt, all of the soothsayers basically call her a false prophet and drag her to a table to stab her to death.
Yeah, with the cool but very silly looking knife.
Like, how do they... I mean, I guess it was a ram horn, because I was trying to figure out how would they make that, but I was actually, the more I think about it, the more it kind of makes sense that a handle would have to be something...
Yeah.
They would be able to make the metal, but they wouldn't be able to make, like...
I mean, it would just be easier by that point instead of having to... Because you can make the blades pretty easily, but any other intricate shape, if you can find it in nature, it's just easier to use whatever is in nature.
They do put the silly little, like, almost head on top, on the end
like
of the...
Like a shrunken head, but
yeah,
not. Like,
yeah, because it's got the little feathers coming out of it, and it as the pommel.
In my head, it made this noise. And then also, Scary Stone Lady.
Yeah, they revealed,
hated that.
They revealed the High
Priestess.
I hated
that so much.
Has been fully turned to stone at this point.
I've been avoiding talking about it because genuinely, very scary. Like, not even scary in a way that I can make it into a bit. Scary in a way where I'm like, can we... No! Do you know what it reminds me of?
What's that?
The Gnome King from Return to Oz.
I actually have not seen Return to Oz, so I can't say.
I haven't made you sit down with me to watch Return to Oz.
I've seen clips of it, and it looks horrifying. I've never wanted to watch it.
No, it's really fun. I love it. Like, that's another tattoo I want to get, but I don't know of what, because there's so much frightening imagery in that.
Okay, I just said I don't want to watch it because it's frightening, and you said no.
No, it's really, I think if you watch it, you'll understand a lot more about me.
I mean, the clips I've seen, I've translated fully into how I understand you.
No, it's good. There's Princess Mombi. She has the body of an older woman, but she has hundreds of heads that she's taken from other pretty young things, and she keeps Dorothy locked away so that way she can mature and become beautiful, and she can have her head. But Mombi's design is really cool. That is a cosplay that I would love to get to someday.
And then the doctor...
And the talking chicken, little Belinda. Oh, love her too. The talking couch. Love him. TikTok, not the app.
The doctor confronts this stone woman and demands that she tell him who she is. Not the prophecy, but the alien that has infected her body and turned her to stone.
The only thing that threw me off, and I know it's just because it's a human in makeup, is that the insides of her mouth are still pink.
Yeah. I mean, there's not much you could do about that.
There is and there isn't.
Yeah.
That does require... Because they do it a lot of the times in, like... You can see it a lot more in the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, where they just have, like... actors' mouths covered in like squid ink.
Yeah.
So that way it's black. But that's also something too that if you're taking several takes, it's not really awesome to be like, here, just keep eating a bunch of ink. We can't have your mouth show that you're human.
The doctor confronts them saying that she needs to announce what alien race she is, where she's from. According to the Shadow Proclamation. And I'm like, how old is this Shadow Proclamation that every alien species knows about it at least 2,000 years in the past?
I mean, 2,000 years in the relevant past.
Yeah.
Because if you're going off of the idea that all time is wibbly-wobbly and timey-wimey, then time is happening all at once.
Yeah.
So, you know, 2,000 years in Earth's past could be another alien, like another alien race's current time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's very... It's all,
if you think about it too much, it makes your brain explode.
Yeah, it's also kind of funny that they would know because they established that they have been asleep in the Earth for thousands of years, which then means that Shadow Proclamation is now even more thousands of years old. It's just one of those things where you're like, hang on, what is the timeline we're working on here?
Well, that too, and there's also a fair argument to be made of if the Shadow Proclamation was something that was made thousands of years ago, by the time that it would have become relevant again, would it not be obsolete? If it's been thousands of years.
Yeah, like
because we don't look at books or anything written from thousands of years ago and see it as writ.
Mm-hmm.
That's a joke there. I'm talking about the Bible.
I mean, there is a part of me that's like, I know we criticize the American government for working slowly, but you're telling me the Shadow Proclamation's laws haven't changed in thousands of years?
In multiple thousands of years, not just a thousand.
Yeah, thousands upon thousands of years.
We're talking two, maybe three.
I was really glad that we had the subtitles on for this episode, though, because when she does finally announce what her race is.
Tell me your name!
I don't think you would have been able to understand what that word was.
Pyrovile?
It was pyrovile. But I believe the way she said it sounded more like...
Azkaban.
I did my waiting. 10 years of it. As a pyrovile. Another fun moment was when, in order to stop the Doctor from stopping the pyroviles, they first send a foot soldier after them, which is just a giant rock monster wearing a Roman helmet. Like, it had styled its rock self to look like the Romans because it admired the Roman Empire.
That's cute.
It is cute. But the way you defeat it is just by splashing some water on it.
I still circle back around to my favorite defense the Doctor has in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Is a fucking neon green water gun. A little pss, pss.
I really enjoy the moment where it's like, I have seen into his mind, sisters, the weapon is harmless. He's like, well, it might sting a bit. And he just starts shooting the girl.
It has the same logic as somebody trying to keep a cat off their counter.
I do kind of wonder if the other girls would have freaked out because if he squirted them, their like makeup would have started smearing down their face.
Maybe.
My sacred eyes.
My special eyes.
Like, he shoots them in the hands.
I was going to say they wash their hands.
I can't see. I wash my hands and I can't see.
I do like that they cover their eyes and basically communicate via rapport spores. I would love to be able to just cover my eyes and be able to be like, can I please get help out front?
Like, we just, like, instead of pulling a phone up to our ears, we have to cover our eyes with it.
Like, very much walkie-talkie without the walkie.
Without the walkie.
Yeah.
More but talkie. I want walkies.
More talkie, less walkie.
But then at the end of the episode, we see what's become of Caecilius's family, having been saved from Vesuvius.
They're in Rome now.
They're in Rome now, and Caecilius is about to get himself a big contract with the Egyptians as their marble dealer. But the son is now studying to become a doctor.
And he's wearing blue.
And then he gets told to go pay tribute to the house gods. And the house gods are now the Doctor and Donna.
Yeah.
With the TARDIS in the middle.
Yeah.
There is a part of me that wonders if any of, like, the other people that live in Rome come into their house and they're like, that's sacrilege. We have to kill you.
Who is that? We can't say. We're not allowed.
We were instructed
to not say.
He asked me not to say, but his temple was super cool.
His temple? Bigger on the inside. Oh, scandal. I do wonder if anybody has that carving.
I'm sure. I mean, it has to be. I would assume that it's at the... I don't know if it's still there, actually. But there's a Doctor Who museum in Cardiff.
Dr. Hughesium.
Or I know that's where they
I'm really angry because I was in Cardiff. This was years ago, though, so I wouldn't have known or cared.
Yeah. I know that was where they kept the face of Bo for a long time.
Ugh, my good man.
Yeah, your good man, Jack Harkness.
Shut up! He will never be him! I will die angry.
So there's a very real chance that they kept that there, too, because it's one of those props that, like, I don't know why you would... It's not so big that you need to throw it out, but it's not such a little thing.
No,
that you
it
can...
is not an entire fucking rock set, which can we pause and just appreciate it that of the sets that they could have CG'd and you would have said, yeah, that's accurate because it's so hot that you would have the wibbly wobbly heat vision, heat rays and stuff. Mm-hmm. No, they said, well, let's build this fucking rock
let's
set.
Let's build a cave.
Let's build a giant mountainous cave.
Let's also build a big rock escape pod.
Yeah. Let's build a rock escape pod and then catapult it into our our Pompeii recreation.
Yeah, in the path of the lava, so it will melt when the Doctor leaves it. Anything else you wanted to say for the episode?
No, overall, I like this one. I'm upset that it's taken us 4 fucking series
mm-hmm.
for me to go... All right, I get it. because my timeline for a lot of that kind of stuff is if I'm not hooked.
It's four episodes, not.
Yeah, it's four episodes. So there is a part of me that's a little disappointed that it has taken four series.
I feel like you were getting it last season too.
Yes, but it's only because I knew that I just had to sit through Martha to get to Donna.
There were also episodes where you were like, especially early on, I remember you actually like being excited to sit down to watch the show.
Well, yeah, and it's happening more and more. And I do also think that part of it is I do enjoy, because we had this conversation before even recording, mm-hmm. that I've gotten to a point now where I can actually sit down with other intellectuals.
Whovians?
Intellectuals! I will not use such a slur, thank you. And have an actual discussion, because having a discussion about Doctor Who is something that we have done now for 38 episodes.
This is our 38th episode, yes.
So, you know, I've done quite a bit of talking in the past 38 episodes.
You have. You've had 38 episodes where you've talked about this, so that's like 38 hours at minimum you've talked about this show.
I've talked about this show for like a day and a half. Jeez.
Well,
put me out of my misery. Let me rest.
Well, unfortunately, next time you'll be talking about it a little more on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Oh, jeez. Who's my doctor?
Who is indeed?
I need a doctor. Help. Police. Doctor.
Who is my doctor? Who is my doctor? Who is my doctor? Who is my doctor? Is it bad form to reference the same song in two outros because it's the easiest reference to Pompeii you can think of? Well, too late now. But it's not too late for you to subscribe to this podcast. If you liked it, please leave us a thumbs up or 5 stars or even a nice review. I'm still sharing all reviews on our various social medias, and you can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, and Instagram at WimDPod. That's WIMDPOD. Next week, we go from fire to ice as we step onto the frozen planet of the Ood. We'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.